This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Everybody wants to get paid. I mean, that's true in general, but it's true specifically for the Seattle Seahawks right now. Good morning. It is Danny and Gallant. It's Wednesday. It's June 16th. We're on the back half of June, and the Seattle Seahawks have a number, at least two prominent players, Paul, who would like extensions, please.
Cash rules everything around me, and the Seahawks would like some of that.
And no, they want it. Their players want them to give them some of that.
Yeah. I understand why. I mean, both of these guys have...
Everybody wants to get paid.
That's true. I mean, I would like to get paid. You would like to get paid more.
Everybody would like a little bit more money. Who wouldn't want that?
We're giving out free money here. 710 ESPN Seattle. Just kidding.
No. The Seattle Seahawks. Go ask them for it. Everybody's asking the Seahawks specifically for more money.
Well, they're going to be able to give out more money, aren't they? Are they in a situation right now where when you look at the two guys who are looking for more, Jamal Adams, Dwayne Brown, where they'd say no? Do you feel like they are going to turn those two down, especially given how important and irreplaceable they might be?
Two entirely different questions for two equally important players. These are entirely different questions for these two players. They're both equally important. I think you're right. I don't know how much choice the Seahawks have in this, unless they've really got the stomach for something that could trickle in and affect the 2021 season, but let's tackle them in order. Jamal Adams is the one we knew about, right?
Right.
We know that Jamal Adams wanted an extension from the Jets a year ago. That was what triggered, in part, some of the discussions for the trade that ended up here. And Seattle, the expectation, the understanding was that, hey, they don't look at that until the final year of the contract, but this entire offseason, Jamal Adams' extension has been one of the things that you expect slash hope to get done. He's not present this week at the minicamp. That is excused. Here's Pete Carroll's explanation kind of for what's going on and the hope that they are still working toward a long-term deal. He wouldn't have been able to practice this week anyway, so this isn't that big. But the question of whether or not he gets signed to a long-term contract, that's still very much on the front burner for Seattle.
I don't know that, but I know that, I mean, we're counting on him being back at camp, and he wants to be at camp too, and so we're going to do everything to make that happen.
Well, at least from those words right there, things are amicable, at
sure.
least per what
sounds
Pete
good.
Carroll's telling us. So I'll sure. take that.
Sounds good. Sounds good from that regard. It's not great. You'd rather see him signed. That's a different question, though, because he's a player you traded a lot for. He's someone who's in his 20s. The one we didn't know about yesterday was Dwayne Brown. And Dwayne Brown is at minicamp. But there was a report from Mike Garofalo saying that he would like an extension. He's entering the final year of his contract. He's going to make $10 million. That's a relatively high base salary for left tackles. But he is in the final year of a deal that makes him an average paid left tackle. Average is $11.5 million. That's 16th. Among left tackles in the league. He is getting paid as an average left tackle. He's also in his mid-30s. He'll turn 36 in August. Pete Carroll, when asked about the report regarding Dwayne Brown wanting an extension, let's listen to the coach tap dance.
We're helping Dwayne get through a great offseason. He's doing terrific right now. We're just going to keep cruising on through it and make sure that he's at his very best. We're always talking about the business stuff, so that's always something that's topical, but because he is in his last year coming up. But everything's going great, and he's had a great offseason so far. It's better than it was last year. He's ahead of schedule, so he's in good shape.
Interesting that he showed up. I know that there's the fines element of things mm-hmm. now. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe there's also added pressure on him to be there because of the new offense that's being installed, which we, of course, talked about with one of the frustrations. Maybe the Seahawks offense wasn't there for the first 2 weeks. He is somebody that you can't really replace. That is one of the most difficult positions to find guys at in the NFL. I mean, just look at their history. You draft James Carpenter in 2011. That didn't really work out. Justin Pritt was first drafted as a tackle. That didn't really work out. And after that, I mean, you decided, okay, well, instead of going the way of the draft, let's trade for a guy who's proven. That's going to be hard to do in the post-Dwayne Brown world. You almost have to go with Dwayne Brown until the car eventually dies.
Unfortunately, Seattle has taken that approach with other players at other positions, and the car has died before they've got to the new years of the extension. Everything you said is just right. That still doesn't mean you should necessarily extend a guy who's turning 36.
He turns 36.
Everything you
August
said
30th.
About having somebody else, he turns 36 in August, and promising money to guys at the back end of deals like that and adding years to it, I think Duane Brown is incredibly tough. I think he's played his butt off since he's gotten here. He has been hurt and tried to play through injuries. Doesn't mean you should sign him to an extension. You have to sign Jamal Adams. You have to sign Jamal Adams. Duane Brown is just as important. I don't know if that's as easy of a decision because of his age. He's 10 years older.
Yeah. I mean, how much more money is he going to want? How many more years does he want to play? If this is a year-to-year proposition, wouldn't it be so much easier?
That's why you would let him play it out, right?
Yeah.
Look, the value of the position, I can see. I think it's hard if he asks you to add 2 years at significant money. I think it becomes hard if he basically says, you have to promise me that I'm going to be and I'm going to account for a significant chunk of money in 2021 and 2022. I think it becomes harder if the more years that you get added on, and if it's asking for a 2 year extension, that's different from just adding a year and boosting the pay.
Is there a cutoff age for a tackle? Do you say to yourself, yeah, we don't think he's going to be Jason Peters still playing age 39 years old?
Well, and Peters is someone who has played and stopped playing and come back and moved positions, like right. All of those things. He is at the point of his career where usually guys are year to year, So asking to make a 2 year commitment at this point is a little bit different. Everybody wants to get paid, and I get it. I don't know how much choice you have in this, but this leads and points more toward this being all in short term marriage with Russ, and you've got to pay it because you don't have any other. You don't want to cost yourself 2021, right? Like, you don't want to pay the price of that in 2021.
No, you got to give yourself a little bit of flexibility too, because if things are as smooth as they now seem to be with the great triumvirate, with their little selfie that they took together yesterday, which I thought was really funny, then you want to make sure that the flexibility is here, not just for 2021, but going forward,
Schneider,
too.
Schneider photobomb there? Was that a Schneider photobomb, or was he part of it? Because he sticks his head in, and he's got his pointy chin beard, and he's flashing deuces.
It must have been a concerted effort, right? Because they came in at the same time. Both Russell Wilson and John Schneider.
Hey, watch this. We're gonna go interrupt the press conference. This will be cool. We'll show everybody that we're buddies.
I liked it.
It's Danny and Gallant. The Mariners came off. It's got to be their most complete or most convincing win. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. J.P. Crawford hits a home run. The first pitch he sees, they jump up 1-0. Shed Long clears the bases in the second inning with a bases loaded triple. And then you have Chris Flexen cruising. The Mariners end up winning in lopsided fashion, and they've got a 3-game winning streak. They've got a bona fide winning streak.
That's the most complete victory they've had probably the last 2 years. I mean, it's not just a shutout. It's also a 10-0 victory where you get 14 hits. Top of the orders, smashing the ball around. Ty France, too. Bottom of the order, getting some contributions. Our guy Jake Bowers, who we called Jack that one time, he continues to do very well. That was a nice win. I know the Twins aren't very good, but, man, you even got 8 innings out of Chris Flexen, of all people, who somehow is 6-3 on the year, which is just a surprising number.
Chris Flexen, low-key, for a guy that was pitching overseas last year, you guys that the Mariners have just found, he's being added to the list. He's being added to the Austin Nola, Dylan Moore pile of guys that really weren't expected much. And Jake Bowers, he keeps hitting home runs like he did. He might be added to the pile, too. Guys that you didn't expect too much from who have really thrived.
Yeah, Jerry DePoto deserves credit for that. I mean, there's been a lot of found $20 bills at the couch over this season and last year too.
Makes up for the fact of what that Patrick Wisdom guy is doing over in the Cubs, who was a one-time Mariner farmhand who everybody's been moaning about, which I don't blame you. It's frustrating to see that. There's also nothing that man had done previously in his career to indicate that he was going to go on the kind of tear he was on, but the Mariners have won 3 in a row. Get the opportunity. Do you break out the brooms tonight? Do you break out the brooms?
Oh,
do you
yeah.
get excited
Bring
for the possibility
the
of that?
Come on. Come on now.
710 first pitch tonight right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Pregame starts at 6. It's time to get to Front Page News.
This is the Front Page. Today's top two stories and why they matter. Every morning at 710, get what you need to know to start your day right now.
It's your favorite kind of story, Danny. Tyler Glasnow, a pitcher who suffered an injury. He's blaming his injury, no, not on anything that he might have done. He is blaming it on baseball changing its rules.
But I just threw 80-something, 70-whatever innings, and then you just told me I can't use anything in the middle of the year. I had to change everything I've been doing the entire season, everything out of the window. I have to start doing something completely new. And then I'm telling you, I truly believe that's why I got hurt. Me throwing 100 and being 6'7 is why I got hurt, but that contributed. And so I'm just frustrated that, like, they don't understand how hard it is to pitch one, but to tell us to do something completely different in the middle of a season is insane. I just don't, it's ridiculous. There has to be some give and take here. You can't just take away everything and not add something. Pitchers need to be able to have some sort of control or some sort of grip on the ball.
So he's saying he got hurt because he couldn't use stuff that he wasn't supposed to be using?
Sounds like it.
Sunscreen and rosin specifically is the combination that he uses. Like, doesn't that sound crazy to anybody else? I got hurt because I couldn't use something I wasn't supposed to be using anymore.
It would be akin to somebody in the steroid era taking steroids and saying, yeah, I got really bad back knee and all of a sudden I'm having withdrawals and I'm not as strong because I can't take steroids anymore. It sounds really weak.
Here's what it's like. You're 10 minutes late to work and you get docked for that and written up, and your explanation is, well, there's been a crackdown on speeding. You can't expect me to get here on time if everybody's demanding that I only go the speed limit, because I've been accustomed to speeding. And I had this understanding that we could go 15 miles an hour over the speed limit.
Yeah.
And now they've told me that if I go over the speed limit, I'm going to get a ticket. So that's why I'm late. You can't penalize me for being late because you started making me not speed.
It's one of the perks of driving early in the morning. Last up, by the way, pitches for the Tampa Bay Rays and the Mariners. They start a 4-game set with Tampa Bay here at T-Mobile Park tomorrow.
Check them all. Make them scrub off all their sunscreen and rosin.
The Front Page.
Let's go start with a bit of exciting NBA news, and then it gets a bummer real quick. Kevin Durant was awesome last night. First half, people were getting their jokes off. Oh, Kevin Durant's going to have to join the Bucks in the offseason. Kevin Durant, the Nets have been devastated by injuries. Kyrie Irving has a horribly sprained ankle. He was not playing last night. James Harden did play, but
he was
not
awful.
Really. Yeah, because he's got a bad hamstring. They were down to, they have three stars, and they were down to one of them last night. 1.25? Is that a quarter version of James Harden that was out there? And Durant comes out in the second half and went nuclear. Scored 49. He had a triple-double. It was a monster performance. And I like KD. I've always, and I think Seattle feels the same way. He played here. He loved playing here. Like, he really is. Seattle might be the NBA stop where he's most popular. OKC hates him. The Warrior fans were never that into him.
It's a shame for his legacy that a game like last night, it finally happens and he gets some appreciation for just how awesome he is by himself. I mean, he's the second best player in basketball in terms of skill set and everything else over the last 10 years. I don't even think that's debatable. It's him and LeBron James. And in the second half, you mentioned it, he's 10 of 13 in the second half. 7 of his field goals made were unassisted. He had 8 of the team's 18 rebounds in the second half of the Nets only steal. That was a magnum opus with a bad James Harden out there. And you know what? If he had not gone to the Golden State Warriors, he would be celebrated in a completely different way today. And it's unfortunate for him, but that's just how this thing goes. If you don't do it all on your own before, you're not going to get the same kind of praise after something like last night.
You can't sign with the team that beat you. Like, it just, you can't do it. If the Nets win, this might be his signature moment. It's really cool. The bad news that I mentioned comes from the other playoff series. Chris Paul entered COVID protocols this morning.
Yeah.
So he's out indefinitely.
Yep.
The Suns have swept the Nuggets, so the only upside there is there might be a little bit of time, and we're not sure how much time he will miss, but that's a huge bummer. I'm not sure what that means about whether or not he had been vaccinated, whether he's been exposed, has he tested positive. I'm not sure of the specifics of that, but he's entered COVID protocol. And the other one's Kawhi Leonard, who we last saw eviscerating Derek Favors, is out with a right knee injury, and he might not be back this whole series. Huge bummers.
Yeah, all of a sudden, guys are dropping. I feel bad for Chris Paul. I would imagine that vaccination might have helped out, but whatever the case, the guys just had the absolute worst luck when it comes to the playoffs. And, I mean, whether it's the hamstring with a 3-2 lead on that great Golden State Warriors team with Houston or this, basketball gods, they do not smile upon him.
Standing Gallant, let's get the professor in here for the morning drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, we already knew that Jamal Adams wanted a new contract. Now we find out that Dwayne Brown wants a new contract. He turns 36 at the end of August. How should the Seahawks play that situation? Do you give him that extension?
If you can, I think what you have to do is you have to do Jamal first, because you know you got to make sure that there's enough room to fit everything in and do the things you want. I mean, Jamal, of course, is the younger guy, certainly so vital for the defense, and they're making some progress. I don't see anything being done until training camp. Sometime in the middle of training camp, I think they can get something done. But you know what you do is, because I was looking at the numbers that Andrew Whitworth was able to get, right? And what you can see is that once you get to like 36, 37 years old, the numbers don't go up. And so in other words, you know, he's making, what, $10 million this year. And, you know, it may have to be a deal that he makes a little bit under 10 or somewhere near that. If you can do it, you certainly need that left tackle. And I think he's still good enough to be able to do it. But I don't think you have to rush to try to get something done. But in the end, I think that if you can find a way to do it, you need to do it. Because, again, he's so important for the offensive line.
If he's asking for a year to be added, that's probably different than him asking for 2 years to be added.
Yeah, I think
do
he
players
just wants,
ever
yeah.
do players ever just have a single year sort of stapled on to the end of it? Would he probably be looking for a multiple year commitment here?
Well, probably a multiple year, but you know, look at Andrew Whitworth. I mean, I think he just did a 1 year deal. Mm-hmm. You know, because back in 2017, he did a 3 year deal, and then he came back and he's done a couple 1 year deals. And you know, when you're at this age, I mean, it's hard to get the multi year deal. You might get it just because you can save a little bit of cap room and do something else. But I think it's got to be probably a 1 year deal, and maybe at the most a 2 year deal, no 3 year deal. That's for sure.
We saw officially Jamal Adams was not at a mandatory minicamp yesterday. Pete Carroll said it was for personal reasons. And it does sound like at the very least things are amicable at this point in time. So what does that say to you, Professor, about perhaps the timeline on a new deal between these two parties?
Like I said, I think it's going to probably be sometime maybe in the middle of training camp. I mean, as long as he doesn't hold out, that certainly would complicate things because, you know, he needs to be here. And I think, you know, he likes it here, all those different things. So I think, again, they're making progress, but they're not close. You know, I would have to think that ultimately they may have to go up to $16 million to get this done. Maybe that doesn't satisfy Jamal, but also don't get greedy about this stuff, because you're going to be maybe the highest paid safety in NFL history. And I know he's probably worried at some point somebody's going to top him, but everybody gets topped. I mean, look at Patrick Mahomes. You know, there was a little bit more money in the Dak Prescott deal. That's just inevitability. But it's like, don't worry about where you stand as far as the legacy of some deal. Just get the most money you possibly can.
John, what happened to Tua Tagovailoa yesterday? Got picked off five times. They were counting his interceptions during the OTA. It sounded bad.
Well, yeah, but it was pouring rain. I mean, the weather was just absolutely horrible. I mean, because even all the backup quarterback threw two interceptions. I mean, it was one of those things where, you know, Brian Flores tried to pull a little bit of a Bill Belichick and have him out there in just a pouring rainstorm. And the weather was so bad, you can't grip the football, all those different things. I'm sure that the the water in the air was pulling the ball down and all that stuff. So it's like this isn't one of those like Jimmy Garoppolo, throws five picks in clear weather and stuff like that practices. I mean, this practice was just a disaster because of the rain.
Why'd they do it then? He's replacing Fitzpatrick. There's going to be a lot of scrutiny. Like, Tua's got some pressure on him this year. If he doesn't play well, people are going to feel that they goofed on that pick and that team's ready to go and he's not the quarterback for it. I don't know if I'd throw him out there in a monsoon.
I question it, too. It's like, I guess you try things as a coach, but sometimes as a coach you can try some things that's wrong. And I think if that's the case, I mean, if it was going to be raining like that here in Renton, I mean, you're not going to have Pete Carroll put these guys out there. They're going to be in the gym and inside the building and all that stuff. So it's like, I know you get heavy rains down in Miami. It's an outdoor stadium and all that stuff. But to me, it was one of those coaching maneuvers that I think just doesn't work.
Interesting. I mean, I feel like if you're in Miami, you do get weird weather from time to time. Why not have the quarterback throw in a monsoon just to get acclimated a little bit?
It's his first practice since Fitzpatrick went and left us up with Washington football team.
Yeah.
He's got a little placard. Like, let's make sure he's got every ounce of confidence destroyed this offseason. Why not?
Yeah, I think that you make coaching mistakes, and I think this is probably a coaching mistake. It's like, okay, I mean, because it was a monsoon. It was really bad as far as how the weather was yesterday. And it's like, it wasn't just like, one quarterback struggled. Every quarterback struggled. The only difference is Tua is going to get more snaps because he's the starter.
Professor Josh Allen, let's talk about another quarterback in the AFC East. He said this at his press conference yesterday. No offense to any of you in the media, but the bar I set for myself is higher than anyone else can set for me. So very lofty goals for himself this season. Where do you think by the end of the 2021 season we will have him ranked among NFL quarterbacks? Because I think there are some questions about what he was able to do last year in a season without any fans in the stands.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to rank pretty well, because I think the way you look at it is that among the young quarterbacks in the AFC, he's probably right behind Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I think he's looking to be that good. And does that make him a top five quarterback? No, not yet. He still has more to prove. But I think what you're looking at is that, Buffalo now is in that elite group of AFC teams. Josh Allen is one of the reasons he had such a great season. He's got a great receiving group. He's got a GM, Brandon Bean, who ended up, being the GM of the year, executive of the year. So it's like, just make sure you don't say you're better than Patrick Mahomes, because nobody's going to buy it.
Professor, we always appreciate it. We'll look forward to catching up with you tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
That is John Clayton, the professor. Our morning drive with him. You can hear him 4 o'clock with Wyman and Bob. Coming up next, do the Seahawks really have any choice when it comes to those extensions? They're kind of painted into the corner. We'll explain why next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
When you have a lot of leverage, you can wield a lot of power. And both Jamal Adams, because of what the Seahawks gave up to trade for him, Danny, and Dwayne Brown, because Seahawks really haven't had a good left tackle other than him over the last decade. They wield a lot of power right now.
There's also, though, the idea that you got a little leverage. Don't overplay your hand, right? Like season 5 in The Wire, when Rawls ends up navigating his way to becoming the head of the state police. And he's warned right then. He's like, you got a little leverage, but just a little. Don't overplay your hand. Yes, both those players have leverage. Both of them do. Seattle wants and needs both of them for very different reasons. I don't know that that means you get to write a blank check, though.
Okay. Do you think either could overplay their hand?
Yes. Yes. Dwayne Brown most specifically. It depends on. I think it's very reasonable for him to say, look, I'm 35 turning 36. You've seen how I've tried to play through different injuries for you. You've seen everything that I've done here. And right now I'm on a deal that makes me an average paid left tackle. Give me a little something, for the effort. Either a raise or add a year to the end of the contract that gives him more money now. Like, those are very reasonable. saying I want a new 3-year contract, that's probably overplaying your hand.
Realistically, though, should he ask for that 3-year contract, I'd imagine there would be some sort of attempt at a compromise made by the Seahawks. But given his durability, I mean, the guy's played through a ton of injuries, given his consistency, given that he is by far their best offensive lineman, I think he can ask for a little bit more. I think he can ask for potentially that 3-year deal that's maybe a 2-year deal or something like that.
Yeah, I'm speaking for what he would ultimately settle for. Ask for whatever you want. What you would ultimately end up would, if you insist on a new 2 years being added to it or 3 years of a new contract, I think he's overplaying his hand. I don't. If you're Seattle, can you promise him and say, "Hey, we are going to bank on you being our starting left tackle for this year and next year"?
But I think you have to bank on him being your left tackle for this year and next year.
It's different when you say bank on it than hope. It's different when you say, look, if you sign him, if you add 2 years to the existing contract and boost him up to where his average per year is going to get up toward $13 or $14 million, what happens if he's hurt this year and he doesn't play a down in 2022?
Well, you're in not very good shape, or Russell Wilson gets sacked 40 times a year like he does every single year and there's not much of a difference felt.
And that's what I mean. If you've got significant money tied up in that, I think he's a year-to-year prospect at this point of his career. I think he's a good bet as a year-to-year prospect, but I don't think you can tie yourself in. So that's what I would say. He's got a little leverage. I think he should get a raise. I'm just not sure that you're going to get yourself to 2 years, basically 2 years, the next 2 years of fully guaranteed money.
You're looking at this a lot more practically than me because you said hope versus bank. I do think, though, Seattle has no choice but to bank on Dwayne Brown for these next couple of seasons. The way to get a tackle, specifically a left tackle in this league, it's really difficult. You need a first-round pick. Guess what Seattle does not have in next year's draft? If you're going to find legitimately someone with a good opportunity of being that next left tackle, right? I mean, that seems like it has to be a former first-round pick unless you stumble into something miraculous.
Yeah. Yes, it's hard to find that guy. Seattle has found that both via the draft, and it has found it when it's tried to find and develop guys to take the place of Russell Okung. Yes, it's really hard to find that guy. And they had to wait for Dwayne Brown to become available to be able to make that move. That doesn't mean that you spend money so you avoid having to make that. Just, oh, I've got my left tackle taken care of. He's turning 36.
Yeah.
He's turning 36. If you say we're going to promise him his next 2 years worth of money, we're going to promise him that, and if he doesn't play through his age 37 season without injury, we're financially hamstrung. I mean, that's basically betting all in on 2021, right? Like that is making it even more so. If this doesn't work, man, are we going belly up? And everybody wants to get paid, which I get it. Jamal's is a little bit different. Jamal's is entirely. Seattle's going to win that one if they want. It's just how quickly can you do it? How effectively can you talk him down from the idea that I want to make $18 or $20 million a year because I'm one of the best defensive players in the league? And you telling him, yeah, but you're a safety.
Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. That is your counter-argument.
You're a safety.
His counter-argument is I'm the best player on this defense.
And they say, we're going to pay you as the best safety in the league. We're going to give you $16 million. We're going to give you $16.5 million. And there's no other safety that's making that here.
I feel like you should try to overplay your hand here.
If you're Jamal Adams?
I mean, what do you have to lose? They gave up all those things for you.
Yeah, and then Seattle says, but you're a safety. Are you really going to hold out? Are you really going to want to change teams for a second time because of this contract?
No, you're not going to want that. But I think Seattle's in one of those.
I will pay you more than any other safety. I'm not going to pay you as a position you don't play.
Do you think they will pay him more than every other safety?
Yes.
You do think?
Yes, I think that's a slam dunk. I don't think there's any dispute about that. Who's the highest paid now? Is it Simmons?
Yes, Justin Simmons in Denver.
Yeah, and I think he makes 15 and a half. Yeah, I don't think that they'd flinch at paying 16 or 16.5. Not flinch, it's not my money, but I don't think that's a holdup at all.
People get bent out of shape over the definition of safety these days because a lot of people seem to think that Jamal Adams isn't actually a safety, even though that's
what it says on his card.
What is on his card, right? It's a position he
plays.
It's
where he lines up, right?
it is where he lines up. But you could also argue that anyone who's not playing in that deep third in Seattle's defense could be a variety of different positions, right?
Well, I mean, Cam Chancellor was a safety.
True, but isn't he a different? I mean, there's obviously the difference between free safety and strong safety. Now you could take a look at any of those guys who aren't dropping into a deep third in this defense. Can you say what position they are? I mean, is there that much of a difference between Marquise Blair and what he would do versus Jamal Adams? And I would just say from the perspective of they're guys who are not necessarily responsible for one deep part of the field and are kind of, hey, all right, do whatever you can in this sort of interior, this middle interior.
Yeah. No, Jamal Adams is your best safety. He doesn't play deep middle third, but he's a safety. And he gets a lot of sacks because you blitz him a lot because he's really good at that, but he's a safety. He plays safety.
He plays positionless. That's what I'm doing if I'm Jamal Adams.
No, he plays – that's not – We'll pay him as the best safety in the league, but he's a safety.
If I'm Jamal Adams' agent, I'm going to make something up. I'm going to make up some word. I am the Jabberwocky. This is my position. I am all over the place.
Don't make me point out his interception numbers, but those aren't exactly very high. Like, so, yes, we love the sacks. We love the 9.5 sacks. And we're not fixated on the fact that he doesn't get as many interceptions as most safeties. But he is a safety. And if we're going to go – I mean – is there a counterbalance? Is that a carbon offset for the way he plays?
You know what? That's a good point, and that is definitely something that the Seahawks probably should fixate on if they want to save some pennies. He's Danny Odiello-Pagalot. Danny Agalot, 710 ESPN Seattle. The Mariners kicked the Twins' butt last night, and the guy who is at the center of now a three-game winning streak for Seattle has been on a tear. Is this sustainable? We'll tell you who it is next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
What was your favorite part of last night's Mariners game? Was it how J.P. Crawford started it? The solo home run? I think we've got that highlight. First pitch he saw. There's something about it when you just decide, I'm going to ambush the first thing this guy throws. You're J.P. You're not known for any power, but all of a sudden, you jump on it, and here's the result.
Leadoff batter, shortstop, J.P. Crawford leads things off. Here's the pitch, and a swing and a drive, deep to straightaway right field. Going and going, Krill off the right fielder, looking up, and goodbye baseball. J.P. Crawford with a leadoff home run here in the bottom of the first inning, giving the Mariners a very quick 1-0 lead, his fourth home run of the season. And on the very first pitch of the game from starter Jay Happ, the Mariners have a run in the bank. How about that?
How about that indeed? Whoever's got the crowd mic on in the background makes it sound like that's a playoff game kind of atmosphere, huh? That sounded noisy. I like it. But that was awesome to see first pitch J.P. Crawford smashed out of the park. Danny, one of the reasons I really have a deep appreciation for George Springer now with the Toronto Blue Jays is because you saw a lot of that. It's obviously not something you're expecting a whole lot out of with J.P. Crawford. He doesn't really hit for power. But that man, that on the first pitch, poor Jay Happ. That dude looked like he needed to retire last night.
Is J.P. Crawford going to make the All-Star game?
He is your best player right now. Right?
Absolutely. Bring it on. I'm going to rake your face.
Yeah, he's going to rake your face. He's going to rake your face. Haniger, I think, is fairly a lock for the All-Star game. And shortstop is a very, very competitive position.
Especially with all the voting that takes place for it. I mean, I imagine just by default that whoever is the Yankee shortstop, it's Gleyber Torres at this point in time, is probably going to get a stupid amount of votes.
I'll tell you what, the way Crawford's been playing, and in June, he just keeps, if this season started as a question about, hey, can he be your everyday shortstop, the question has now progressed to, is that someone you want to invest in long term? Is that someone, even though you've got a little more, I think you've got 2 more years before he can be an unrestricted free agent, is this a guy you want to lock down?
Someone who's batting 400 this month? Yes.
Spraying the ball to all fields and he plays gold glove defense.
Oof.
And Scott Servais talks about him as the quarterback of the team. Now, J.P. Crawford has been doing this all of June. In the second inning, you get the benefit of a little production from the bottom of the lineup. A familiar face, somebody who got an opportunity last year, was kind of slow coming back from an injury this year. Our friend Shed Long, who I typically don't like infielders in the outfield. I'm not a fan at all of infielders playing in the outfield. Shed hasn't looked bad out there. And yesterday comes up with the bases loaded, and here was the result.
Here's the 0-1 pitch of the way, swinging a drive into the gap, in right center field. This one will get all the way to the wall. Murphy will score. Bauer's running third. He scores. Turenne's rounding third, being waved in. He's going to score. Heading for third with a dive, sliding in. Shed Long Jr. is safe at third. He clears the bases with a three-run triple into the gap in right center field. And the Mariners with a 4-0 lead over Minnesota.
Yeah, getting to see him back in the lineup's great. I mean, he's had just an absolute unfortunate last couple of seasons with that injury that he suffered.
The shin injury, and it was tricky, and he didn't really kind of, between he and Dylan Moore, I think they were hoping that Shed Long is the one that separated and became the second baseman. Instead, it was Dylan Moore in that spot. It was fun to see. It was fun to see that I'd love to see some more production from the bottom of the lineup, and you're kind of trying to patch your way through this right now with Kyle Lewis injured. There's no timeline for his return. Scott Service is pretty hopeful that he will be back this year, but that doesn't sound like it's anything imminent here in the next month or even really the next two. They do expect him back this year. And in the meantime, maybe Shea gets an opportunity to hit a little bit more.
Yeah, I would like to see him get as many ops as possible. I think you want to try to figure out as much as you can about some of these guys who are probably in between players, who you're not 100% sure about necessarily as a starter, maybe not even 100% sure about them as a major leaguer when the things supposedly get good. But, man, that's a nice showing for him. And, you know, too, it's easy to forget about Ty France, who consistently gets plunked.
Why does he get hit by so many pitches?
He's got to be leaning in, right? I mean, he's got to...
I mean, he's certainly got some armor. He's certainly well-protected. I mean, I think he's been hit a dozen times this year.
12.
He got hit in every game in that Detroit series.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, somebody's got to stick up for him. At some point, like, he's getting hit too much.
Ooh.
I'm getting mad about it. Like, why does he keep getting hit?
I feel like if he took more of an issue with it, then maybe that would be something that they would retaliate with. But my assumption is that there's a general understanding that perhaps he is gaming the system a little bit to get as big of a target, or excuse me, to make as small of a target for that strike zone as the pitchers could possibly see.
The other part of that, I wondered if maybe he's kind of got a swagger or something that rubs people the wrong way, and he's a younger player.
His last name's France. Like, maybe it's an anti-French sentiment.
No, man. When he's playing first base, he seems super talkative and chatty with the other players. Like, it doesn't seem like he's standoffish or aloof. I don't get why he keeps getting hit.
It's weird.
I'm getting mad for him. Like, legitimately, like, when you see it, like, he gets dotted again.
More than anything, I'm concerned that he gets hurt again and then goes through the slump that we saw him go through earlier this year. I mean, I want to see more.
No, let's rephrase that. He didn't get hurt. He got hit by a pitch on the meat of his forearm. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, I woke up and I got hurt. I just stumbled and it was unfortunate. He got pegged.
So what do? Next time he gets pegged, you throw back. We start playing unwritten rules of baseball games.
What do you call it? The Big Heavy? Big Heavy. Big Heavy. Kendall Graveman? He seems like someone that would be up for that sort of thing. Like, come on.
Why is that?
I'm just saying that a guy with a nickname Big Heavy.
Okay.
It comes in and the kind of velocity it shows. He seems like he'd be someone that would stick up for his teammates occasionally. Yeah. Yes, let's get some biblical eye for an eye sort of stuff.
You might need to ask Terry DePoto about that tomorrow, if there needs to be some sort of retaliation for the crimes committed against one Ty France. But once again, another nice performance for him. He had a home run and a double.
That's generally what I found is the best thing, is to ask career baseball men about unwritten baseball rules. Like, it tends to be really productive. Like, they tend to be very forthcoming, and they'll tell you exactly what they're thinking. Like, and nobody gets offended at all. Baseball guys can't even agree right now about whether or not you get hurt. Tyler Glasnow.
Yeah, what the hell is that? Oh my god.
Tyler Glasnow is mad because he strained. He didn't pop it, right? He said he felt a little tug in his UCL, his ulnar collateral ligament, which is the ligament that when pitchers have it repaired, that's Tommy John surgery. It's in the elbow. He said he felt a little tug in it, and he's blaming the fact that he couldn't use the grip enhancer that he'd been using all year. I think we have the cover. It's unbelievable what Tyler Glasnow said here.
But I just threw 80-something, 70-whatever innings, and then you just told me I can't use anything in the middle of the year. I had to change everything I've been doing the entire season, everything out of the window. I have to start doing something completely new. And then I'm telling you, I truly believe that's why I got hurt. Me throwing 100 and being 6'7" is why I got hurt, but that contributed. And so I'm just frustrated that, like, they don't understand how hard it is to pitch one, but to tell us to do something completely different in the middle of a season is insane. I just don't, it's ridiculous. There has to be some give and take here. You can't just take away everything and not add something. Pitchers need to be able to have some sort of control or some sort of grip on the ball.
Well, he sounds like somebody from Napoleon Dynamite. Michael Bumpus joining us for Blue 42. That's next, Danny and Gallant.